Boker Tov to everybody. Apologies for the slightly late start. There was a problem with the copier yesterday. I needed to run up and make some more copies. But hopefully everybody has them and we'll be able to move forward. Welcome, as I said, to everybody. A special welcome to my mum and dad who are here. It's lovely to have them. And they're here, of course, for the wedding that, please God, we're making tomorrow. So it was a nice opportunity for me to escape from the house for a few minutes to come and give a share. Thank you very much to everybody for their very kind wishes. I've received lots of very kind mazel tovs from people. I really do appreciate it a lot. Next week there will be no share from me. I don't know if there will be a share here. You can check with the desk. But I won't be here next week, but please God, from the week after, we will be continuing. In terms of topic, I promised you three topics on wedding-related issues. We talked already about mixed seating at the chuppah. Today we're finishing the issue of hair covering in the kalah, which we will be identifying the taking apart, if you like, the anatomy of the wedding and how the whole wedding fits together and all the different parts of it, which I think will be very interesting, and how that works with the kalah and her hair covering. Next week, as I said, there won't be a shir, but in 2 weeks from now, I would like to raise the very interesting modern-day halachic and hashkafic, quite controversial issue of prenuptial agreements, which is a very important one today. I'd like to work out what exactly they are, why people support them, why people oppose them, and what the alternatives are to some of the critical issues that come up in Aguna, etc. So I'd like to talk about that in a couple of weeks, and then after that we'll move out of wedding mode into something else. Okay, this is part two, but it doesn't matter if you weren't at part one because I'll recap briefly. In part one last week we looked at the general issue of hair covering and head covering for a married woman, and we tried to analyse where do we learn that from. And we said there are basically three different parts to that mitzvah, to those halachas. Part one is the issue of the dignity of the married woman that was learnt out from the sota. The sota, of course, was the woman we discussed last week who had committed inappropriate actions and was publicly undignified, if you like. We did things to her in public which were the opposite of dignity. And from that we learnt the whole issue of covering the hair, or as it says there, covering the head, kisui rosh, as an issue of dignity for the married woman. And by the way, this is true for the married man as well. There are certain minhagim, maybe not halachot, but minhagim that we have, even for married men, that they cover their head with a talus, they cover their head with a special hat, whatever it is, because marriage is, if you like, moving from a youthful state into something which, in Jewish terms, we consider to be very important, very choshev, especially for a woman when she goes from being a single woman. You know what it's like? Today she's a single woman and she's a girl. Tomorrow she's a married woman and she's an Ein B'Yisrael. People come to her for advice. You're a married woman, etc., etc. It's a whole different world becoming a married person, and that's what the whole Kisui Rosh issue is learnt, if you like, from Sota, this issue of dignity. A very interesting shaila on a side issue. One of my rabbonim received a question from a very senior, important teacher in a women's institution, in a Beit Yaakov institution, who for whatever reason was not married. She was an older lady, she was already in her 50s, 60s, and she'd never been married. And she had a question, should she or should she not cover her hair? Interesting question. Because on a certain level, well, she's not married, I mean, there's nothing really to talk about. On another level, she is a person of importance, of a central figure, if you like, in that community, and there may even be an angle to argue that she, under this din of the sota, if you like, learned out from the sota, not of the sota, obviously, maybe she does have to cover her hair in that sense, because it's not just about the marriage, it's about what that represents. So that was the first halacha of hair covering.
When a woman becomes single again.
Good. So that's the corollary. That's the next question, which is, I'm not coming to now so much, but let's deal with your question. Let's say a woman was loyalenu divorced. So does she still have to cover her hair? So we talked a little bit about that last week, but that may depend on the same question. For example, let's say a 20-year-old woman gets married, and there's a disaster, God forbid, and a week later, they separate and she gets divorced. Now, Is she now a married woman who used to be married and is no longer married? No, she's really a girl, as she was before, as opposed to, let's say, a woman who's in her 40s, 50s, 60s, who's married for 30, 40 years, when if she were to, God forbid, get divorced, she doesn't turn back into a girl. She has the status of who she was. And there may be, therefore, a different shaila. I'm not a posik, I'm not passing any shaila, but it may depend on the scenario. I had a scenario once when a student had a friend who had one of these disastrous situations a week after the marriage, the whole thing fell apart, and she had a whole question, should she or should she not cover her hair because of what happened. But that was the first issue. The second issue we talked about last week was Dat Yehudit, and we'll get more into it today. Dat Yehudit is a second tier. Dat Yehudit means the Jewish custom, the Jewish minhag. Meaning, once we've established that the sota has, or the, from the sota rather, that the married woman has to cover her hair in public, what kind of covering and what kind of public and how does that work and what are the minhagim of the community? So we said last week, Dat Yehudit fills in all of those blanks, if you like, based on the local minhag of the women in that community, what kind of hair covering, which place is for hair covering, Dat Yehudit will determine that. And then there was a third angle we didn't really get into, which I'm not getting into, which is the whole issue of Seyar Be'isha Erva. Chazal created a category in the Gemara in Brochas of there are certain uncovered parts of a woman or a man, for that matter, where people are not allowed to say Brochas in front of them, etc. And therefore there's a technical Erva angle to that, but that's not really the root of the obligation to cover hair. So that we talked about last week. And then I'd like to pick up at source number one here, which is, actually, we saw this at the end of last week and segue into today's share, which is what's with the kala? Now, a kala is clearly a married woman under the chuppah, but does she or does she not cover her hair? So on the surface, well, why not? She's a married woman. A married woman has obligations in public. Why would she not cover her hair? And yet everybody in this room knows that there are very, very many people, in fact, it used to be probably most people, that the kala does not cover her hair for the whole day of the chasna. Nowadays, it's becoming more and more common for the kala to cover her hair already before the chuppah or in the yichud room. And today, I want to work out why that is and maybe why that changed. Okay? So let's have a look at this. Let's pick it up from number one. We did this last week, but it's good to revise it, and we'll move on. It says in the Mishnah in Ketubot, Ha'isha shenit armelo shin gasha. A woman was married, and now she is unfortunately widowed or divorced, and there's an argument about her ksuba. Okay? The ksuba was lost, they can't find it, and they're arguing. She says she's entitled to 200, because when she got married, she hadn't been married before, she was a betula. And he says, no, you are entitled to 100, because when I married you, you'd already been married previously. And now they're trying to prove who's right and who's wrong. Number one. He or married the Sulunisitani. She says to him, no, I was never married before. When you married me, I was married for the first time. And I'm entitled to 200. Vahu Omer, and he says, Loiki, that's not the case. I married you when you'd already been married before, and therefore you're entitled to 100 zuz, not 200 zuz. By the way, what exactly 100 and 200 zuz is an interesting question. The Rabbanut in Israel has become quite strict about defining what that means. Because, you know, it's no good just saying 200 zuz. We don't really work in that kind of currency anymore. And they quantify that, and as far as I'm aware, 150,000 shekels is around 200 zuz as they quantify it today, meaning the amount that would need to be paid for somebody to, you know, be supported for a certain amount of time. But of course then there's the tosefet ketubah that the husband can add on extra, and that's obviously a negotiation as to how much he puts in. You occasionally, yes. 200. As far as I'm aware. For a newly married, unmarried before. But again, you know, I don't want to start any shalom bias issues. If you think that you're entitled to more than, I'm sure you're entitled to a million zuz. But, fine. So what do they do? How do they prove it? So the Mishnah says, in Yesh Eidim, if there are, they ask and they see if there are witnesses from the original marriage, Sheyata behinuma barosha parua, that she came out with her hinuma, and we defined that last week, it's either her bridal litter that they carry her out or with her veil on, barosha parua, and her hair is uncovered. If they find witnesses that says, yes, I remember the wedding 15 years ago, the bride came out with her hair uncovered, oh, it must be that she'd never been married before, she was a betula, ktubasa ma'atayim, then we can prove that there are 200 zuz, to be paid, and that's enough proof. By the way, the Mishnah goes on. We didn't see this last week, and I'm not getting into it. There are other evidential proofs that the Mishnah suggests. If they can bring out the children to tell us what you remember about the wedding, and if the children say, I remember they threw nuts at the kala as she came down the aisle, whatever, that's also evidence, because the minhag was that they used to throw things, rice and things like that. Nowadays it's rice, so anyway, for certain communities, not necessarily in the Jewish community, but in the non-Jews, but they used to have certain minhagim that they would only do for bitzulot. You see the importance of a minhag. A minhag is not to be sniffed at. The minhag can sometimes come back 20, 30 years later and be an important halachic evidential point. This, we talked a few months ago about the minhag, or the halacha rather, of hachnasat kala, by the way, which is not what we're talking about today. The Rambam says that there is a mitzvah, obviously the haftal arecha kamocha, and that includes the hachnis et kala. So how do we do hachnasat kala today? What do? It used to be in the old days, they picked her up from her father's house, and they physically brought her to the chuppah, the bet ha-chuppah, the bet ba'alah, etc. So now what we do, as the bride comes in, all these different minhagim of the, you know, the little kids with the dropping the petals and people standing up and the kala coming in and the dancing her in, these are all kiyumin, these are all actually fulfilling this idea of lahachnit. It's very important. Many of the things that we do at the wedding, they may seem like shtick, or they may seem like strange minhagim, or interesting just minhagim, but they're not just that. They may be actually fulfillment of the mitzvah itself. Fine. So if she came out with her hair uncovered in her veil, that's a sign that she was a betula. Rashi says, number two, Rosh HaParua, her hair uncovered, and we looked at this last time, he says, Ishevelei, her hair was disheveled, and he describes it. What does that mean? Sarah Al-Ktefer. Her hair was on her shoulders. Okay? That's how they brought out an unmarried woman, a previously unmarried woman, a betula, mibeit avihem, from their father's home, lebeit hachatuna, into the chatuna. Therefore, if we see that her hair was on her shoulders, that's a sign that she was a betula. Was it just the hair on the shoulders? So again, the last source here that we saw last week, in number three, says, no, actually, it was not just the hair on her shoulders, but maybe it was all of her hair was uncovered. Look at this in the Shita Mekubetzis. It quotes from the Gaonim. Rosha Parua. What does that mean? Perish Magula. Uncovered. She wasn't covering her hair. The Kachaya Nogin Libetula. That's what the minhag was for a betula. The Lola Almana. But they would never have done that for a woman who was previously married before this wedding. The Haida Amrinu Paris Rosha Isha. Ah, but when it says in the whole Parsha of the Sota, isn't there a mitzvah? Isn't there an obligation for a married woman to cover her hair? Isn't this a married woman? We'll see more about this in a minute. Utana debe Rabbi Yishmael, mikan azara lebenot Yisrael shelo yatsu b'proi rosh. Isn't what we see from this that a married woman has to cover her hair in public? Says the Gaonim, ikla meima, we can answer b'nesuot kamayri. That's only with a nesua. More of that in a minute. But not with an arusa. And this we said last week, and this brings us into today's shir. Back in the day, they used to split the marriage, and they didn't do it together under the chuppah like we do. We do kiddushin, and we do nisuin. They used to do the kiddushin first, and then 12 months later, they used to do the nisuin, meaning she was betrothed and married halachically. Kiddushin creates a valid halachic marriage. She would require a get if they wished to separate, but they didn't do it all together. They did it, and then 12 months later, she took 12 months to prepare, get herself together. He earned some money. Back in the day, it was a minhag to earn money before you got married. That's also something that has developed with time, a little bit differently. You know, all I get when I ask my daughter and son-in-law to be, like, what are their plans? I get, you know, the Israeli shrug, you know, whatever. But Hashem Yazor. Hashver Yazor, yes. What's that? Say that again? Well, Tanai we do today, but Tanai is not an essential part of Jewish marriage. So they did Kiddushin, and then Kiddushin, he said to her, Hare at Mekudeshet Li, 12 months before, and he gave her the ring, or whatever he gave her. You don't have to give a ring under the chuppah. You could give a can of Coke. That would also be halakhically valid. It's not so romantic, but it would work. So he would do the kiddushin, and 12 months later they would do the nisuin. And therefore you see an important point here, and this is the point that we made last week. This woman that they're bringing out in her veil with her hair uncovered is already a married woman. She's an arusa. She is not yet a nesua, but she's an arusa. And you see here that she has her hair uncovered. So, what are the stages of marriage? Let's just remind ourselves, and then we'll look at what actually is the halacha lamaisa. So I brought down at the bottom of the page there 8 stages of marriage, which we looked at briefly at the end of last time. First of all, there's, as you mentioned, well, tanaim comes second, but first there's what we call today an engagement, or shiduchim. That has no halachic implications in terms of binding the two together, just to have an engagement. Even though we call in Hebrew an engagement an erusin, it's not really an erusin, it's just a modern Hebrew word for something which is technically incorrect. Then some people have tanaim, which doesn't create a marital connection, but it creates a contractual obligation for them to marry, and breaking tanaim is a very serious business. I mentioned the Vilna Gaon says it would be better for them to get married and then divorced rather than break the tanaim, because there's a lot of serious issues going on there. So what happens next? So think about how our weddings work. They get to the chuppah, even before the chuppah, the chassan's sitting at the tish, signing all his ksubas and all that kind of stuff, one ksubah hopefully, and then the kala is sitting on her chair. So what's the next thing that happens? The bedekin. So we'll see soon what is the status of the bedekin. He covers over her face with the veil. Does that? What does that do? Then they take her to the chuppah, they take him to the chuppah first, then her to the chuppah, and they do the kiddushin now under the chuppah, hariyat mekudeshet li, and he gives her the ring. That, of course, is preceded by the birkat ha'erusin, the brachas on the kiddushin, which the Masada kiddushin makes, b'rei priya gofin, and asher kiddushanu, b'mitzvotav, v'tzivanu ala harayot. Then stage 5 is they do the chuppah and the sheva brachas right there, and they go through what we now call nisuin. Or is it Nisuin? We'll see. Then they go to the Yichud room afterwards, although the Sephardim do not go to the Yichud room, and we'll see why not in a minute. And then, of course, after the wedding, they start their life together, they have the wedding night, and at some stage, there's the consummation of the marriage, maybe on the wedding night, maybe after that. It doesn't necessarily follow that it will be right then. So let's have a look how that all of that fits into the issue of hair covering. First of all, let's start from the very beginning. Does an arusa have to cover her hair? Now, today there's no real point of time when a woman is an arusa. It's like 15 minutes while they read the ksuba. By the way, why do they read the ksuba under the chuppah? Just to separate, it's a hilchos brocha shaila. Meaning they said brei pri hagofen on the first glass of wine for the kiddushin. They're going to say brei pri hagofen again on the next glass of wine for the nisuin. You can't start making brei pri hagofen every time you feel like having another glass of wine. There has to be something in between, a hesach hadas, some kind of break in between. So they read, they could read anything, they could read the news. But then the minhag is that the custom is they read the ksuba, which is very nice. And by the way, they don't always read what's actually written in the ksuba, because sometimes ksubas are changed for all sorts of interesting family issues, and they don't want to announce those all in public. So what you hear them reading is not always what is written in the ksuba. I hope I'm not giving away any rabbinic secret here, but they read the ksuba just to make that break. They have a Dvar Torah, etc. The arusa, therefore, which today is only a 15-minute period, but back in the day was a whole year, does she have to cover her hair? So, interestingly, the Mishnah Berurah says, yes. Have a look here. I bring you here from the Mishnah Berurah in Ayin Hay. He brings down Ubasulas, an unmarried woman, okay, arusot, but if she is an arusak already, asurot lelech begilui harosh. Meaning, from the moment he says that she's an arusa, she has to have her hair covered, because she's a married woman. Now, if that were the case, then a Jewish woman today under the chuppah would have an obligation to cover her hair the minute that he gives her a ring. Okay? Meaning, as they bring her in, she's not married. Now she becomes an arusa. So as he gives her a ring, hariyat mekudeshet li, she'll have to suddenly, you know, put something on under the chuppah. Now, obviously, that's not practical. That's not going to happen. And therefore, if this is going to be followed, she's going to have to put something on before she walks under the chuppah in order that she has her hair covered already. Ah, what happened to the Mishnah that we saw? They brought this woman in, Barosha Parua, Behinumah, Barosha Parua. What is that talking about? Isn't that talking about an arusa? Didn't we just say that? So the Mishnah Berurah is bringing from the Ma'ari HaLevi. Have a look in number 5. The Ma'ari HaLevi, who was a brother of the Taz, an older brother of the Taz, who is perhaps the more famous posek, he explains as follows in number 5. Says Rashi, we saw over there, explains, goes out of his way to say that her hair was on her shoulders. Why does he say that? Why does he need to tell us the whole hairdo? I'm learning now that pre-wedding hairdos and makeup is actually a much bigger issue and somewhat more expensive one than I'd anticipated. And Rashi is giving us a whole description of exactly how the palace hair looks. Why? He says, why does he need to tell us this? Kach hayunogim. This was the minhag, says the Maria Levi. Lahoitzi et habetulot mibeit avihim lebeit baaleihem. They bring them out from their father's house to the chuppah. Shmamina, the kol shat eirusin loy haita yotza bepriyat rosh. And he wants to say an interesting thing. That this was a chiddush, that they dafka uncovered her hair specially, meaning she was in Arusa for 12 months. She had her hair covered for 12 months. And then specially for the wedding day, they uncovered part of her hair to make her look beautiful. That's his pshat, very interesting pshat. Kloima, hadikatani rosha parua, when it says her hair was uncovered, doesn't mean all her hair was uncovered in Arusa, no. Hainu sheminicha ktsat sofei hasarot la'achareha akteta. They undid part of her hair to make her look beautiful and put it on her shoulders. Well, the Cain perish Rashi, kachayunogim lahoitzi et butulav mibeit avim. That's why Rashi goes dafka out of his way to tell you what her hair looked like. Otherwise, why would I care? Kolayma she'ein itse begilu ksat. Says there's no problem on revealing that little bit. Kazeh. Zipnishikach no, lugalat also ksat neasa leifo chashash hirur. Nobody's going to get overwhelmed by seeing the callous hair just a little bit over her shoulders. The hashda ati shapir, now it works very well. Hadikatani shiyatza behinuma, varosha parua. That's because she was wearing a veil, the hinuma, and her hair uncovered a little bit. So loikatani lahedya or rosha parua. It doesn't say either a veil or a haircut. It says no. And it's a tarati bahadabi nagi. They had to do both together. She had to cover most of her hair and just let a little bit showing underneath. This is where the Mishnah's Brura is coming from, that an Arusa basically needs to cover her hair, and we have a special exception for the woman on her wedding day, even if she's an Arusa. Now, if we were to follow this opinion, which in fairness most of the poskim don't follow, then there's nothing to talk about. The Kala has to cover her hair before she even walks under the chuppah, because clearly she's not going to suddenly put something on her head in the middle of the chuppah, and since she becomes an Arusa the minute he puts the ring on her finger and says, Hari Amma Kudeshetli, then that'll be the moment, if you like, that she has to cover her hair. Just in parentheses, as new rabbis, in this country they're very strict about who is allowed to be a Masada Kiddushin. We're actually going through a whole process right now to try and prove to the Rabbanut that my son-in-law's Rosh Hashiva really is entitled to be, which he clearly is. But it's a very organized thing, which is wonderful, because at least it minimizes the chances of getting it wrong. I was a Masada Kiddushin once in California, and I was shocked by how little, like, there's nothing. I mean, anyone can do anything they like. And unless you know what you're doing, then there are lots of things that can go wrong. One of my rabbinic mentors told me once that one of his junior students did his first wedding, and they went through the wedding, and they're beautiful, they brought the chosnin, they brought the kala in, and they said the brochas on the kiddushin, and they did the sheva brochas, and they danced them out, and everything was beautiful, and they're in the yuchud room, and somebody taps them on the shoulder and said, did you give her the ring? And there was this horrific moment of silence, and they completely forgotten to do Hari Atma Kadeshali and give her the ring. They forgot to do the kiddushin. You ask, how can you forget? They forgot. They did the brochas, they got excited, they did the Dvar Teres, read the Ksubah, and then now they have a major halachic question as to what to do now that they're already in the Yichud room, that they... fine. That's why you should not get into these things unless you know what you're doing. Yes?
Isn't the veil...
It depends on what the veil looks like. There are veils and there are veils. Okay, so it depends on what it actually covers. So most poskim do not follow that view of the arusot, otherwise there really would be nothing to talk about. But what about nisuin? What about once the woman becomes a nisua, which is for us when the chuppah finishes perhaps? Have a look in number 6. The Talmud Yerushalmi picks up on this Mishnah. Remember the Mishnah said we bring out the girl with her hair uncovered, and that's proof many years later that she was a betula, that she was previously unmarried when she came to that marriage. So the Gemara asked in number 6 the following question. V'chash lomar, why aren't we concerned? Shema betula mina nesuimi. Maybe when she came to marry this person that we're now having the argument with, 20 years ago, whatever, she came, maybe she had been previously married, but the previous marriage, for whatever reason, was never consummated. Whatever happened, that she was a nesua previously, she was a fully married woman, she's only entitled to 100, okay, 100 zuz, but for whatever reason, the previous marriage was never been consummated. Are we all going to get confused? You're not going to know which was which. And the Gemara answers here, no. Zoto merit, this tells us that betula mina nesuin eino yotzava rosha perua. The answer is, if she had been in an unusual situation, she'd been a betula from a nesuin, meaning she had been married, but the marriage was never consummated, they would never have allowed her to come in with her hair uncovered, and therefore we won't make that mistake. So the Gemara seems to be clearly saying here that whether or not the marriage has been consummated, nisuin, that's it. Nisuin is the moment at which they have to be covered. And I brought you here a tshuva from Rav Moshe Sternbuch. Rav Moshe Sternbuch, who is very well known, we'll see from him in a minute as well, he asked the question why it is that many kallahs don't cover their hair, and he's going to give an answer soon why that is. But first of all, he says what he feels is the halacha l'maaseh, which many poskim actually agree upon. Look at number 7. Ha'emet, the truth is, says Rav Moshe Sternbuch, she'ha'ikahu she'chayevet ha'kala l'chzot rosha. The kallah really has to cover her hair. She came cause of Rabbi Kiva. This is during the chuppah. She came cause of Rabbi Kiva Eger. He brings Rabbi Kiva Eger, Mishnah Brura, that we saw in number 4. Shafilo Arusa. Even if she was an Arusa, Asura Lelech Pruat Rosh. She's really not allowed to walk around with her hair uncovered. V'chayevet v'kitsu Yorosh. The in came. If that's the case, Kol Shekein. All the more so, Shechayevet la'achar chuppah v'chede yichud. All the more so, once she's a Nesua, pure, totally a Nesua, she must have to cover her hair, and she brings this to Yerushalmi, for Yerushalmi eats a zotomeret, but tolamin a tzuin, eni yosef a rosha parua. Hari mefurash, he says, it's absolutely explicit. She'ein heter bepriyat rosh, le nesua, afilu non nivala. There's no heter for a nesua to have her hair uncovered, even if she never consummated the marriage. This whole Gemara was talking about a woman who had been in a marriage previously, which was not consummated. Lechem, therefore he says, bevadai ra'ui shetehe lechupa, im kisui rosh v'tisha erke. She should come to the chuppah already with her hair covered, and she should stay like that. Okay? Yes.
Mother shekels are so fancy and so long, you can shake on the way to the chuppah, and don't be any the wiser when you're wearing a shekel.
So you're asking a good question, but that's not just a question about a color. That's a question about all modern shekels. When the woman has been married for 5 years, she could have a shekel, and people don't know it's even a shekel. That's a separate question which we deal with another time. You know, how do we even allow people to wear hair on their head and call it hair, call it a head covering, etc., etc.? Leaving aside the issue that young married women are often not so comfortable wearing their shekels, have any number of horror stories of, you know, I remember when one of our friends actually was, when we first got married, she was not so comfortable and didn't really understand how her shekel worked exactly. She went to the fairground. This is a true story. She went to the fairground and she went on a Ferris wheel. Okay? And no one had told her the dangers of wearing a shekel on a Ferris wheel. True story. And as she went over the top, the shekel fell down off her head, plunged to the ground, and actually fell into the workings of the machine. And you couldn't make this up. And jammed up the machine. So the machine was then stuck. She was hanging upside down with a new husband, you know, like this on the top of it. So there are other occupational hazards that need to be considered when you do that. Therefore, yes. 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 Ah, good, yes. Good, no. That she would put it on in the Yichud room and come out. But Rav Moshe Sternbuch is saying differently. He's saying even before the Yichud room, once she stood under the chuppah and had the Sheva Bracha, she's a Nesua. He said, where do we ever see that a Nesua is able to walk around without her hair uncovered? And therefore, the question remains now, so why do so many kallahs not cover their hair until after the wedding? Fuck. So I think it's pretty clear in halacha that the burden of proof is on those who say it's okay. And indeed, my daughter will not be covering her hair until the day after the wedding. Why do people do that? So let's have a look now and see what the minhag is based upon. Because it seems clear that there, that needs to be clarified. Now, looking number 8. How does the wedding actually work? This is a very interesting Shulchan Aruch to define what is nisuin. We take it for granted now. When I say to you the word chuppah, everyone in their own mind has this image of a chuppah. It's not so clear that that is what chuppah is. Meaning she has to go through, the couple have to go through chuppah and kiddushin. Kiddushin we know. Kiddushin is him giving her a gift, him saying to her, her agreeing, they're getting married, hariyat mekudeshetli, that's kiddushin. But what is nisuin? What is chuppah? So have a look please in this Shulchan Aruch. Number 8. So the Shulchan Aruch is defining here what is nisuin. And the Mechaber, Rav Yosef Karo, starts as follows. He says this is nisuin. Shiyavi otah letoch beito, that he brings her to his house, into his house. V'yityached ima, and they are together, alone, just the two of them. V'yafrishena lo, and she is just for him, and she is no longer able to be with anybody else. V'yichud zeh, this yichud, where they're actually together in the house, and after the wedding, nikra knisa l'chuppah, that's called chuppah. Chuppah is when the couple go home together after the wedding, and they're together that night in their own home. V'hu anikra nisuin b'chol makom, and that's what's called nisuin in all situations. And he goes into other opportunities of defining. Fine. V'nasid nisuin. V'hari hi ke'ishto l'kol davar v'tzarech levareg birchat chatanim. Says that we have to also make a bracha on this, meaning we make the birchat chatanim before this, and obviously before they go home after the wedding. V'beit ha'chatan kodim ha'nisuin. And we make these brachas as sheva brachas, but says the Mechaber, the real nisuin is when they go home together after the wedding. Now, you're already beginning, hopefully, to see, well, ooh, if she's not really a nesua till after they actually go home together into their own home, so maybe she doesn't have to cover her hair until they actually go home together because she's not really a nesua. So that's his first opinion. Comes in the Ramah and says, Hagar, in the Rashi script, the Yeshom Rim, he gives another few different opinions about what chuppah is. The chuppah ain't a yichud. The chuppah is not yichud. Yichud here meaning them going home together into their own home. Elakol shehi via chatan lebeitot l'shem nisuin. That even if he were to just bring her into his private area, l'shem nisuin, for the purpose of saying this is nisuin, then that's good enough to be. And this is what we today call the yichud room. Meaning the yichud room is clearly not their home. But they are together in a sort of symbolic way. He said it's enough that he brings us symbolically into a place which is, if you like, they're together, and there are people who have a chumrah, they have a stringency, that the chosen has to acquire or rent the yichud room so that they can say that it's his room, etc., etc. That's good enough. They don't have to actually go home together and be fully together. They can be in this symbolic area. That's one opinion he brings. The Yeshom Rim, and there's another opinion, Sheha Chuppah, the Chuppah is not that. What does Chuppah mean, literally? To cover over. To cover over. What is Chuppah? Chuppah is Sheporsim Sudar Al Rosham Beshat HaBracha. Chuppah really is where they put a cloth, maybe a talus is some of them, over the two of them at the time that they make the Sheva Brachot. Maybe that is Chuppah. Chuppah, as in they cover them over, and that's what creates the moment of nisuin. So that's another opportunity to define chuppah. The Yeshomrim, and another opinion is, the chuppah v'tula b'sheyata v'hinuma. No, chuppah is where they bring her out in her veil, when they veil her and bring her out. When they put the veil onto her, that is the moment of chuppah. What do we call that now? Bedekin. So maybe the bedekin is the actual chuppah. Now you know why people are particular, the rabbi who's organizing the wedding, they want there to be aidin for this and aidin for that and aidin for the ichud room, aidin for the bedekin and aidin. Why do we need an aid for the bedekin? He just walks to her and puts the veil over her face. No! According to the Ramah, that may be the chuppah. That's the moment they may call chuppah. He says, but despite all these opinions, he says, v'haminak pashut, achshav, the minak today, back in the 1500s, he says, is likrot chuppah, what do we call the chuppah? Makom shemachnisim sham yiriyah, we bring a sheet, prusa, spread out, al gabe kluntot, on poles. We put four poles up, we put a sheet over the top, that's what we call a chuppah. And that's what we call a chuppah today, certainly Ashkenazim. Umachnisim tachteha chatan, bakala, barabim, and we bring under this sheet, under this canopy, we bring the chosen and the kala in public. Umakatrish sham and almenag is we do kiddushin there as well, although you didn't need to and they didn't use to. Umavarchin sham birkat erusin v'nisu, and we make all the brachas there, the brachas on the kiddushin, the brachas on the sheva brachas. The achakach, and what do we do after that? Mulichin otam lebeit lebayit, we take them into a private area, to the yichud room, and what's the main thing you do in the yichud room? The ochlin, and they eat. Jewish wedding, okay? The main thing to do is they eat a little bit, v'yachad, v'mokam sanua, in a private place. V'zehu ha'chupa ha'noheg et achshav. And this is how we do things today. And Taka, this is how we do things today. And therefore, you see from this Shulchan Aruch, at least four or five different definitions as to what exactly is chupa, what is nisuin. Either it's, then let's go from the beginning to the end. It could be the bedekin, okay? It could be standing under the chuppah, putting the talis around them when they make the brachas. It could be the act of going under the chuppah. It could be going into the symbolic private area that we call the yichud room. Or it could be none of those things. It could be just after the wedding, when they go home together to their private house. That's called the chuppah. That's called the nisuin. Now, our minhag today is that we do all of those things to make sure that one way or the other, this couple is for sure married. Like, once they've decided to get married, there's no chance they can get off the hook. Look in number 9. The commentary there on the Shulchan Aruch says, the Ein Bebach, says he refers you to the Bach, She'anu nohagim kedivrei kulam. We do all of these things. Uba boker, and he says an interesting thing, in the morning of the wedding, Kishemachasim rosh hakala, that when we cover over the hair, or the head of the kala, Zehinuma, and this is the veil, V'nikra chupa ladata Tosfos. Chupa could start as early as that, according to Tosfos. When we call makam nira poshet, calls man shaloi nitkatcha ein chupa koinem a kiddushin. Because even though we do the bidukin before the kiddushin, she's not really married until the kiddushin. Rakshin is katcha, but it turns out that when she is done the kiddushin, nikret lemafreya nesua ledata Tosfos. She will retroactively have turned out to have been married from the bedekin. Interesting kind of lomdas as to how this works. He says it could be the bedekin, in retrospect, is the moment when she really becomes a nesua. Now, according to this, we'd have to, for sure, have the bride's head covered by the bedekin. And it could be that part of what the bedekin is. Why does the chosan do the bedekin? Everyone says to check it's the right color, okay? Not really. I mean, he knows it's the right color. It's partly based on the idea that Rivka, when she came to see Yitzhak, she covered over her face. It's partly maybe either the idea of Rochel and Leah, and you don't want to have Lavan as a father-in-law. Anyway, you don't want to have Lavan as a father-in-law, but you don't want to have that whole situation where you don't know who you're marrying. Although if you marry the wrong person, it's clear in Halacha that you're not married. Meaning if you woke up the next morning, it turns out it's something completely different that you didn't appreciate. So we'll have to talk. Why? You know, how does that work with Agunot? And we'll talk about that. But it could be that the bedekin actually has a much more halachic function, which is that it creates the nisuin at least retroactively. But the truth is that we don't really follow that view either today. If you look in number 10, the Taz brings al kein nira l'didan loy havikitu haynuma chupa. We don't really call the bedekin the chupa. We just do that to be yotze all the opinions. Klal, we don't really do that at all. Ela ha'chana l'chupa. It's just a preparation for the chupa. It's not the chupa itself. So, if we don't call the bedekin the chuppah, so what really is the chuppah? So, it seems that according to almost everybody, that the yichud room does something. Have a look, please, on page number 4. Let's talk about the yichud room for a second. We've talked about the bedekin, we've talked about the chuppah. They now leave the chuppah, they walk into the yichud room together. What does the yichud room achieve? So, many poskim will turn around and say, well, the yichud room is the moment at which the nisuin is crystallized. It is their private time together, excluding anybody else. And therefore, that creates what's called a cheskat be'ula. Meaning, if there's a possibility that it could have had marital relations, it couldn't have happened before the yichud room, but it could potentially have happened after, or during. We'll see that in a minute, whether that's realistic or whether that's not the case at all today. If you look here, number 12, the Shvut Yaakov says, "Kol sheloi nivala muter la'aloch kamo kol betulat masha'en kein benivala." It's only really the question that we're asking is the question as to whether she has what we call a cheskat be'ula. There's a possibility she may have had marriage relations or not. That's the moment at which it becomes relevant to cover her hair. Now, by the way, The Sfaradim do not go into the Yichud room, usually, straight after the chuppah, but they go straight to the wedding, okay? I don't know when they do the photos, that's a good question. I mean, I've never really asked. They have a haftaka? Okay, so they have a little haftaka? Ah, they see each other. They've got it all worked out, okay? So the Sfaradim, they don't separate before the wedding, if you like, and they do the photos before, fine. So the Ashkenazim, of course, do the photos after the Yichud room. So there were some Sfaradim that said, you know something, let's be extra machmir, and let's go to the Yichud room also like the Ashkenazim do. Yeah. And Rav Avadi Yosef, you need something, yeah. So the Rav Avadi Yosef said, no, that is not a chumrah, that actually is causing problems. Why? Because the universal minhag with the Sfaradim is the kala for sure does not cover her hair during the wedding feast. The kalas, the Sfaradi kalas, do not do that. Why is that? Because they really hold that the yichud is when they go home together after the wedding. He said, if you try to be machmir, you try to be strict, and you go into a yichud room straight after the chuppah, you've just caused yourself a load of trouble. Because maybe that's now the yichud, and therefore maybe now you have to cover your hair, says to the kala, and the Sfaradi kalas don't cover their hair. So that's a perfect example of people might try to be machmir, might try to be strict, and actually it causes trouble in halacha, and it may lead to a leniency in that sense, and therefore Rav Avadi was very insistent on them not doing that. But even after the yichud room, many kalas do not cover their hair. And the question is, why not? Yes? Why did what? Because according to that remark that said that reason the name of the ram, that the nisuin is caused when the chassan brings his wife into a private area which is just theirs, and even symbolically that creates nisuin. In order to be yotzi that opinion of the ramah, we go into the yichud room. The Sfaradim aren't worried about the opinion of the ramah because they don't paskin like the ramah; they paskin like the machaber. Fine. So why do Lemaisa so many people not cover their hair? Because it seems that she's a Nesua, even from the Bedeken, from the Chuppah, etc. So Rav Moshe Shtenbos asks this question as well. He says in number 12, Umihu etzel rabim meha chassidim, many of the chassidish families, loy nagu kein, they just don't, the girl doesn't cover her hair at the Chuppah. Okay? Umechaz roshan, rak lemachara. Only the next day, they cover. This is what most people do. This is what my wife did. This is what many people do. V'ulai kevan shenahug etzlam shemegalchot tzarot l'macha. Maybe with the Hasidish, you could say they're going to shave their hair off. Now, not many. I don't know. I've never done a survey as to how many people still have this minhag of. I know many people do, but I suspect not as many people do as people think. There are certain communities where the minhag, they shave all the hair off after the wedding. Okay. So there maybe he could explain Shemadam She'ein Isur Pri Rosh El Machar, that really the Isur Pri Rosh starts the next day. V'af Sheledina Barurli Shechayev B'Kisui Rosh, even though I'm sure he says I paskin that the Kala has to cover her hair before the Chuppah. He already said that, because even as an Arusa, for sure as a Nesua, Miyad La'achar Chuppah, Mikol Makom. Nevertheless, he says, I've seen this. Ra'iti Makom Nenasot Liyashev Min Hagam. I think it's necessary, says Rav Moshe Shtenbuch, to try and justify the minhag of so many people that don't cover their hair at the chuppah. Shekashal arer al revavot benot Yisrael. How can you cast aspersions on all these Jewish women, kshirot utznuot, from good families, who are people who are take their halacha seriously? Shebayom kaparot avonot shelahem, on the day that they're having all of their averis forgiven to them, okay, that ovrot al isa priot rosh. How can you say that these women, on the very day that they're trying to be the most careful and have their averis, if you like, wiped out, that they go around with their hair uncovered inappropriately? Umakshilot et arabim. How can you say that? And then Rav Moshe Shtenbuch, who is often quite harif about many things, feels the need here to explain the minhag. Okay? Why is it that so many kalas do not cover their hair? There must be, even though he doesn't pass in their way, there must be an explanation. And the explanation, I think, is rather straightforward. Have a look, please, on page 4 at the bottom. And he says, Vihine. Number 13. He says the following. Vihine. Katav tikvar b'makomot achirot. I've already written makomot achirim in other places. שאיקה חופה דנישואין היינו כשמית יחדית עמו וראויה לביה עם מיטה מוצא. Okay? Meaning, look, let's get real here. The real nisuin is when they have a yichud together in a situation where they could consummate the marriage. Aval im rak heimidu chupa v'hityached ima b'cheide yichud kemekubal. But what we do today in a cheide yichud, asher nasid nisua, even though, yes, we do that as part of the process of her becoming a nisua, says it's not really the end of the process. Zehu tchilat ha-nisuin. It's really only the beginning. Mikol makom gemara nisuin, the real nisuin happens, eino ela b'chai ishut. It's only when they go home together as husband and wife after the wedding. V'chein ha-minag etel ha-sfardim, and he points out that that is what the sfardim do, she'eina chatan v'akala nichnasin l'chede yichud achar chupa. The chasen and the kala don't even go to a yichud room by the sfardim, because they know that's not the real yichud. That's just a symbolic thing. Rak mit yachadim yachad yichud gomor belaila. But they have the proper yichud on the night after the wedding. Va'az hu gemar nisuin. Va'al pizeh niruli yashevet the minhag. And therefore I feel that I need to justify the minhag of so many Jewish people that the kala doesn't cover a hair. Haravach, which is so widespread, shal rabbi me'achasidim, she'en ha'kala mechazos roshim b'chuppah. She'noktim kaposkim k'sharusa muteret leilech priyat rosh. They clearly go according to the opinion that an arusa is allowed to uncover her hair, which is a legitimate opinion. But sovrim shirak ba'ulan, they hold that only a couple who actually consummated the marriage, or al kompani rak b'nesua sheit yachta b'yichud gomor harui lebiya asura leilech priyat rosh. He basically says that everybody knows today that our yichud room is a place where the chasan and kala sit, they schmooze, they eat, They have a little bit of quiet, private time. That's what our yichud room is. Nobody in their wildest imagination would think that the yichud room is designed for the chosen and the kala to consummate the marriage. And therefore, on that basis, and many poskim hold this way, I've given you a list here, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rav Aaron Kotler, Rav Victor Miller, Rav Yisrael Belsky, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rav Moshe Feinstein. They said that our yichud room is necessary for Ashkenazim for sure. It's an important symbolic part of the nisuin, but it is certainly not the real deal in the sense that she becomes a nisua at that point. Yes.
So the only other point is that the Sfaradim are all known non-fasting.
Right. Even by the Ashkenazim, it's a minhag for the Ashkenazim to fast, and many do, but not all the Ashkenazi fast either. The Sfaradim. Ah, so you see some Sfaradim fast. Ah, but she didn't have a chedi yichud. So that is one very strong justification in understanding the process of the nisuin as to why our minhag is, why the custom is so widespread that the kala does not cover her hair properly or fully until after the wedding day, because really she's only in the sewer when they go home together and they have a yichud gomer in that sense. There are other justifications, maybe I'll mention them before we finish. Let me just say four other things which I think need to be said. One suggestion which is actually made, which is fascinating, by Rabbi Yehuda Henkin. Rabbi Henkin is a well-known Talmud Chacham, very much an advisor for the modern Orthodox and religious Zionist communities here and in America. And Rav Henkin, in his Tshuvas B'nei Bonim, he says an interesting thing. We talked last week about Das Yehudit. Das Yehudit means, what does a kala have to do in private in her she's not in the public arena? There may be different minhagim that different people have. Maybe when the law of the learned out from the sotah doesn't apply in that way, because you're not in the shuk, you're in your own private home, or you're in a semi-public area. How does Das Yehudit kick in there? And he said it could be that a kala has a special Das Yehudit, because she's a kala. And she's in a private-ish place, meaning she's in the wedding hall, she's not in the public arena, therefore the classic Torah din learnt out of head covering in public maybe doesn't apply in quite the same way. She's ke'ilu in her own private dalet amos, and therefore maybe because she's a kala, she's dressed as a kala, wearing the dress, wearing a special veil, that she keeps her veil on, and that she has a special Das Yehudit. And therefore that's why the kala is not covering her hair the way that normal women would cover their hair, perhaps in the house or in a private area, because she has a din of a kala. And kol odd that she's a kala, wearing the dress, etc., she has that special din. Usually, the next day, the Kala's not still wearing the dress. I know that they're in the wider world. Sometimes, they go on their honeymoon, and she wears a wedding dress on the plane, etc. That doesn't seem to happen much with Jewish weddings. But it could be that the Kala has a special din within her Dalet Amos, if you like, within her home, quote unquote, and that she covers her hair in her own way as her Kala. In fact, the minhag of the Purushim, the old Yishuv, the minhag was, and it's recorded, that the bride would have her hair uncovered during the meal, during the wedding meal, but she'd wear something that they call a galanda. Does anyone know what that is? I looked it up, I couldn't find what that was. They bring down the kala in the old yeshuv, she'd wear a kind of a crown, a special thing, a galanda. It sounds like garland? A galanda? I thought maybe a flower? It's a flower thing? It could be. Right, but I'm talking about even in the 20th century, after the Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, maybe it's a modern day version of that. Interestingly, Rav Kook, when Rav Kook married off his daughter to Rav Shalom Nathan Ra'anan, so interestingly, it was remarked upon that the Kala covered her hair at the whole for the chuppah, and they asked him, why did they not follow the minhag of the old Yishuv? And have her hair uncovered, and they suggested that Rav Kook came from Russia. They were following the din of Chutz Laaretz. In Chutz Laaretz, they had a different minhag that they did cover their hair. And it's clear that there were many places where the Kala did come to the chuppah already with her hair covered. And interestingly, that's what happened to Rav Kook's wedding. Two last points on this issue, and we'll bring it to a close. Rav Avram Shapira, the Rosh Hashiva of Merkaz Arav, previously raised an interesting point, which he said. There is an idea in halacha, shaloi lahaitzi laz al doris harishonim. What shaloi lahaitzi laz al doris harishonim? That, and this is brought up in the halacha, that if we start taking on new chumras, it almost by implication casts aspersions on the people of previous generations who never had those chumras, and they were fine from people. And he said, therefore, he makes an interesting point. He said, if the Kala's mother didn't cover her hair at the chuppah and at the wedding feast, the Kala shouldn't do that either. Otherwise, it's impliedly, if you like, critical of the frumkeit of the parents' generation. Interesting. This is not something that you hear that often. Mothers-in-law are a whole different parasha. I am not making any comments on mothers-in-law. Okay? Although I do know a few jokes, but that's not for now. And the last thing I would end with is Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says that whilst l'chadchila he also requires them to cover their hair, they required a kala to cover their hair before the chuppah. Many poskim said this. Certainly by the time they got to the yichud room, and actually one of my colleagues told me that Rav Neuwirth, who was the author of the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, and who was a Talmud of Rav Shlomo Zalman, Talmud Mubak of Rav Shlomo Zalman, he wouldn't be a Masada Kiddushin at a wedding unless the bride had her head covered already under the chuppah. Even though that was the case, Rav Shlomo Zalman said, Shalom Bayis in this particular situation is far more important. And if either the Kala is unhappy about being told that she has to cover her hair or put a shaitel on in the yichud room, or the other side are unhappy with that, then for Shalom Bayis, they should certainly, as long as she's wearing the veil, etc., and she has this din of a kala at the chuppah, she can certainly rely on the lenient opinion, because at the end of the day, Shalom Bayis is going to be very important going forward into the marriage, not just on the day of the chuppah. So, in conclusion, where have we left ourselves here? I think it's very clear that there is very strong halachic precedent to require the kala to cover her hair already before she comes to the chuppah. That's clear. That's not just a wild chumrah. It's very clear from many of the posts. She's an arusa, she's a nesua. However, the long-standing minhag the communities have where the kala does not cover her hair until after the wedding feast is based, I think, clearly on this idea that the real nesuin doesn't happen until they go home together as husband and wife. And you can add all these extra factors at the end as well to justify the minhag, the shalom bayis, etc. So hopefully we should all have many smachot together. And please God, in 2 weeks from now, we should reconvene to talk about other issues. Have a wonderful 2 weeks.
I attended a wedding where during the meal...